Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, delivering lunches to Maine's medical workers all this month to thank them for their dedication. Learn more at leeauto.com.
Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with senior political correspondent Matt Leary and chief political correspondent Steve Missler. Governor Mills has now joined the governors, announcing plans to loosen coronavirus restrictions. But Mal, for the most part, not right away.
Not at all, Erwin. And they're spread out over quite a period of time. Probably the first date of importance is the 26th of March, when bars and tasting rooms will be allowed to operate under the food and drink COVID checklist. This is new for them. Then the next big date is May 24th. That's when we see indoor gatherings go from 50% to 75% of capacity. For outdoor gatherings, the percentage of capacity goes from 75 to 100%, or back to normal for things like outdoor concerts. Those businesses that have more capacity under the current policy, that's 50 people for indoor gatherings, 100 people for outdoor gatherings, or 5 people per 1,000 square feet, are permitted to maintain that standard until May 24th. What's important to point out here, though, Erwin, is that all of these phase-ins and changes, including making it easier for people to come into the state for tourism, can be changed. At one point, the governor made it very clear that this can be adjusted up or down, depending on what happens with the number of Mainers being vaccinated, and indeed, what happens with the coronavirus nationwide.
Steve, are you surprised that the governor chose to make these announcements now?
A little bit, Erwin. And the reason is, you know, one of the justifications that the administration used in scheduling these changes is vaccinations. And, you know, right now, 10% of the Maine's population has received both doses, just 10. That's it. 19% of Maine residents have received one dose. So they're really banking on vaccinations ramping up in a significant way. That's one thing. I thought the March 26th reopening of bars at certain capacities was also interesting in its timing, unless they really think they're going to really ramp up vaccinations to a point where, you know, there's a lot more people inoculated, both doses, not just one. I mean, one thing that was also interesting was there's this change where, you know, for a long time we've had a quarantine for people that come to the state that are not from Vermont and New Hampshire. She's eliminating that requirement for all New England states. In addition, you know, if you've been vaccinated, people will be able to come in without any quarantine requirement at all. They would have to provide some sort of proof that they've been inoculated. The inverse of that, though, is that they're actually creating a system where they have an exemption list for states that are not performing well. So a state that where perhaps the coronavirus is out of control, I'm thinking of Texas, which announced that they were all done with their restrictions this week. You know, the Mills administration is basically reserving the right to tell those people they can't come without a quarantine. So, you know, and I think the other thing too here is that a lot of this is trying to bolster the two industries that have been hurt the hardest here, and that's tourism and the service industry. Some of it may seem early, but again, as Mal pointed out, there's some flexibility there. So if we go crashing on cases, perhaps this stuff would get rolled back. I do think there might be a danger in that though, because again, as we saw a year ago, when the governor released the reopening plan, she had to dial it back a couple of times as cases got too high. And that really upset a lot of businesses, if you recall.
This really is somewhat predicated on the Johnson & Johnson rollout of their vaccine. It's a single shot. So that's going to boost the numbers pretty quickly.
Well, Maine's COVID-19 vaccination plan changed again this week as the governor agreed to let educators step to the front of the line regardless of their age. So Mal, on this one, I want to start with you because this is not the first time teachers in Maine have gotten what they want in public policy.
Of course not. The teachers, as they are at the national level, are a very important political group. They're kind of a subset of organized labor, if you will, but they are very well organized and they put a lot of political pressure on. Here in Maine, for example, you actually have a number of teachers that are serving in the legislature.
I was going to say, historically, of course, teachers also have their jobs protected when they serve in the legislature.
A number of union jobs have the same provisions. Yeah. We've had a number of people serving in the legislature that were one of the big, from one of the big paper mills, for example. Probably the most big example of that was Mike Mishu, when he served as a state senator and then president of the Senate. At the same time, he was still an employee of Great Northern Paper.
Steve, were you surprised that the teachers got what they wanted reasonably quickly, actually?
The only thing that was surprising to me was that they didn't get it sooner, frankly, because if you recall, it was just 4 days prior to Governor Mills basically saying that, you know, the teachers would become a priority, that she had said that Maine's vaccination plan was basically going to be age-based. And that drew all kinds of criticism because it left out people with, you know, conditions that make them more susceptible to COVID-19, more susceptible to serious illness, that sort of thing. So she suffered backlash on that count. And then the teachers were upset because they weren't included in that priority group too. And the real trigger appeared to be that the Biden administration basically directed states, you know, he doesn't have full authority to, you know, see this through, but he was basically asking states to prioritize teachers. 30 states were already doing that. Maine was one of 20 that was not. A lot of people had stories, including us, that were queued up, ready to talk to teachers who were livid that Maine was not part of this, you know, prioritization plan. And here's an example from Jan Murphy, the head of the teachers union in Augusta.
My phone blew up. People were so, so upset. And part of it was, okay, you can teach in the front lines and be exposed, but we're not going to honor that. It's kind of how people felt.
Well, that changed, of course. You know, the only thing politically that Mills opened herself up to a little bit is criticism from Republicans that, you know, that she is, you know, kowtowing to the union. The only reason why I think that that criticism has been a little bit muted in this case is that Republicans nationwide have made opening up schools a priority. And again, 30 states, some of which are controlled by Republican governors, were already doing it. So that might mitigate some of the criticism that Mills may face. It's certainly a criticism that's out there. I've seen it in some conservative circles already.
Well, the legislature has been grinding away in the background, but one of its committees has now taken a significant budget vote. Mal, what does that tell us about the shape of this particular budget plan and what may be ahead?
Well, so far, we really don't have a budget plan. This is the supplemental budget that needs to have an emergency passage, which is 2/3 vote. The Republicans on the Appropriations Committee rejected the majority plan. It revolves around a tax conformity issue, but not the one that we've been reporting on for several weeks. And the Democrats basically said, okay, you want full conformity on the provisions under the Paycheck Protection Loan Forgiveness? We'll give you that. But the Republicans have said, no, we want full tax conformity to all the changes that have been made at the federal level. And that includes such things as allowing for full deductibility of meals by businesses. Currently, they can only deduct half the cost. That's been a battle that was fought in Congress. I know all taxation is arcane, but this goes into some really arcane provisions dealing with offshore investments that they want to conform to simply because the federal government's done it. They want to have full conformity across the board. Well, the Democrats are going, well, that makes no sense. That's really not going to help Maine businesses. What's going to help them is doing what we're doing. And what's also going to help is using a provision that takes one-time excess revenue from the sale of liquor that has boomed during this pandemic. And it will pay for the provision that will forgive the income tax on unemployment benefits. And, you know, the Republicans just kissed that off and did not consider that as part of their package. The bottom line politically is, much like we're seeing in Washington, the Republicans are digging in on their position. The Democrats are digging in on their position. The difference is there's a procedure down in Washington that's being used now where it only takes a simple majority to really get some big pieces of legislation through. That doesn't count here. Our Constitution's clear. For bills to be an emergency, it takes 2/3 vote. House Republicans hold firm on this position. There's not going to be an emergency budget. The result of that, which is, I'm sure, your next question, is going to be, I would call it tax chaos. We would then not be conforming to anything. The PPP provisions, all those extensions of other tax breaks, and that would be disastrous not only for individuals, but businesses would really be hit hard. And time is running out.
And Steve, this, of course, is just, as Mal's been pointing out, this is kind of an early skirmish because what still lies out there is the next two-year budget, which the legislature also has to finish.
You know, what you're seeing now is perhaps the opening salvo, if you will, by Republicans about how difficult those budget negotiations on the two-year spending plan are going to be. I mean, you know, going back to Mal's point, though, on this particular one, I'll be interested to see if the Republicans continue to hold this line because, I mean, Democrats are all too eager to talk about this right now. Right after this vote from the Appropriations Committee on Thursday, they turned around and held a lengthy hour-long press conference staking out why they think they have the upper hand in this, at least from the standpoint of public opinion. Troy Jackson, the Senate president here, talked about how not only did they meet the Republicans more than halfway, they met them 100% of the way on this tax conformity issue on PPP loans, which was the sticking point. You know, Republicans, I don't know if they'll stick to this or not, but if they do, they risk basically being blamed perhaps for not getting this supplemental budget spending plan through.
Now let's turn to Second District Democratic Congressman Jared Golden. Once again, in the last few days, he has voted against the interest of his party, in this case on a bill that would provide some police reform. He's a Democrat in a conservative-leaning district. Steve, how's he doing as he's trying to navigate this high wire act?
Well, it's tough to say, you know, because what we see is basically the backlash he's receiving from, you know, liberal activists, some of whom claim to have worked for him and campaigned for him in his very first run in 2018. You know, a lot of those people are ripped. They're basically telling him to, you know, unenroll from the party, just become a Republican. They're saying they'll never vote for him. They'll never, you know, knock on doors for him, that sort of thing. You know, and a lot of this is centered around the fact that he's essentially taking the kind of votes that Republican Senator Susan Collins sometimes has to take when she defies her party. Jared Golden has not said this publicly, but it sometimes seems as though he's emulating that sort of centrist strategy that Senator Collins has basically built a career on and has been very successful doing so. I mean, you know, again, she won a convincing reelection after a very, very tough two-year campaign against her. So I think Jared Golden perhaps is trying to emulate that strategy. And for one reason, because his district may demand somebody who's in the middle, his constituents, and that's a very purple district. It swings between Democrats and Republicans, and it continues to lean toward former President Donald Trump. It voted for him twice and handily. Part of this may be a calculation, and it's not sitting very well with Democrats, but there are certainly conservatives that have applauded him for taking this kind of a position. But at the end of the day, you know, he's one of two Democrats that voted against this George Floyd policing bill. And he's one of two Democrats who also voted against this massive stimulus proposal, which is also generating a lot of irritation amongst Democrats. The question is are they going to be so unhappy that they won't vote for him again? I tend to doubt it.
And he really telegraphed weeks ago that he may not vote for the stimulus package. He called on leadership to come through with a much narrower bill that just dealt with COVID issues directly, paying for vaccine, paying for distribution, those sort of immediate costs. He very clearly started talking way back then where he said, you know, we should be acting on things that we can and then fight about some of these others. So he's been kind of dwelling on this middle position for a long time. This is not new.
Mal, Steve, thank you both very much, as usual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is Maine's Political Pulse for this week. A reminder, we update the podcast each Friday afternoon. You can download it from mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcast. Some changes for those of you who catch us on the air. We're now going to air part of the Political Pulse on Fridays on All Things Considered, so you can be listening for that. You can also read Steve Missler's Maine Political Pulse newsletter. It is published Friday mornings, and you can have it sent directly to your email inbox. Just visit mainepublic.org to subscribe. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Join us again here soon on Maine's Political Pulse.